The Last Command, part of the Starman series, www.starmanseries.com. Copyright 2005 by David Bauman, John Cooper, and Mike Dodd. Chapter 10, Out of the Darkness. For a few seconds, the Starmen stared uncomprehendingly at the tachyon portal, finding it hard to believe that it had been sealed against them. "We must have triggered some sort of defense response," said Zip, biting his words off. "Let's hope it didn't send an alarm to our hosts." He struck the solid space inside the oval with the back of his fist. Then he turned and stared into the cavernous space around them. He tried to raise Tharsos on his real-time transmitter, but as he expected, there was no response. "The chamber has been sealed against tachyon transmission. Maybe the entire planet's been sealed." "Well," he stated decisively, "unless the janitor can open this portal back up, the only way out of here is going to be by wormhole. That means we'd better find the power source and succeed in our mission." "Even if we knock out the hypershield," said Joe, "that won't give us a way back to Tharsos. They'll have to know where we are before they can scoop us out of this pleasure palace." "We'll face that fact when we get there, Joe. In the meantime, we'd better get busy. There may be a squadron of Xenobots after us already." "We'll have to find a way down first," said Mark. For the first time, the Starmen took a serious look at their surroundings. They were atop an octagonal stone pedestal about 30 feet across and at least 40 feet from the floor. The top was paved with closely fitting stones, upon which a pattern of stars had been carved. There was a railing around the edge, ornately decorated with metallic swirls and gracious piping. One side of the octagon extended outward to form a ledge. The portal through which they had passed was at the end of the ledge. Their suit lights lit up the space for 100 yards or more in every direction, but the walls and ceilings were too far away to be seen. What had captured the Starmen's attention were the gates, hundreds upon hundreds of them appearing to hover in space. Thin circles, ovals, and rectangles of metal and glass or crystal, some even sparkling with jewels, were suspended in every direction, some near and most far. As far as their light shone, the Starmen could see the portals above, below, and around them. Struck with astonishment, the three men stepped gingerly forward, turning slowly as they moved, gaping at the array. "Doorways to other worlds, other planets," said Joe, his voice expressing the awe he felt. "Maybe even other galaxies," added Mark, "or other universes." "And all of them dead," stated Joe tersely. "There is no living energy here, nothing coming up on the indicator." He'd withdrawn the detector from its case. "After I filter out our own energy bands, there's nothing to see. He stopped suddenly, then peered more closely at the monitor. Mark and Joe came up and looked over his shoulder. "What is it?" asked Mark. "Faint," said Zip. "Very faint, coming from..." He looked up and jutted his chin outward. "Over there." "Which brings us back to Mark's question," said Joe. "How do we get down from here?" "Give us some analysis of this place, Mark," said Zip. The big Starman referred to his compad. After a brief pause, he said, "This chamber is roughly circular, 723 feet across at its widest point. The ceiling is 810 above us, but there's an opening that continues to go upward. It's probably an access well to the surface. We are just under 5 miles underground. The atmosphere is mostly methane with some trace gases. There's enough oxygen that our own NPAC should be able to keep us supplied. There are several passages that lead away from the chamber." He looked up. "And except for us, there's nothing living anywhere inside. This platform must be the takeoff point the Lucians used to travel to the points of their empire," opined Zip. "The portals must have been brought to the ledge here, and the people could step from the ledge to any planet they wanted." "What this place must have seen," observed Mark. "I wonder who was the last to use it, the last to see this chamber before we arrived, and how long ago?" "We still haven't figured the way down," said Joe gently. Zip began to make a careful survey of the floor. "Look for signs of a gate on the stones," he said. "There must be some sort of opening to a stairwell or elevator." But after a thorough scrutiny, the Starmen found no means of descent. "It's got to be there," said Zip, "but we can't find it." "What's the gravity on Luxa, Mark?"
0.73 that of Earth."
"Huh," grunted Zip, looking over the railing. "If it's 40 feet down, it'll feel like 30 if we drop. We'll have to use the cable. Joe?" Joe withdrew a length of cable from his pack. Zip hung both ends over the ledge, looping the cable around one of the stanchions of the railing. Then he swung over the rail, grasped the double cable, and lowered himself hand over hand. He had to drop the last 10 feet. "Next," he called out. Mark was the last one down. He pulled the cable after him, coiled it, and handed it to Joe. "Let's take a look at the well you mentioned, Mark," said Zip. "Over there in this direction," indicated Mark. A short walk brought the Starmen to the bottom of an immense vertical passage. Zip took a reading. "This goes to the surface," he announced. 5 miles up. Quite a climb. "Looks as though there is an elevator up there, just where the platform sticks out," said Joe. "It's about 40 feet up, even with the top of the pedestal." "Maybe there was a bridge between them at some time," suggested Mark. "You can get up there by that staircase," he added, pointing to a wide set of stone steps that led upward, curling around one side of the well. "Power source this way if it's anywhere," said Zip, matter-of-factly, pointing off in another direction. As the Starmen crossed the stone floor of the Chamber of Nexi, the darkness receded in front of their cocoons of light, but as they passed, inexorably it closed behind them. What had once been the hub of galactic travel, bringing the Lucians from world to world in their domain, was now a pit of Stygian darkness that had not known any light or sound whatever for countless eons. In their decline into depravity, its own inventor had misused it, perverted it, spoiled it, abandoned it, and then forgotten it even existed. Its power source, drawing upon the planet's inner heat, continued to provide apparently endless energy to the Xenobot's projects above ground, though its masters turned wheels and threw switches in utter ignorance of why their machines worked. Through a gaping archway, Zip led his companions down a tunnel, following his indicators on his detector. Suddenly, Zip felt a compression in his ears, and he found himself lurching forward as if he'd been pushed from behind. He scrambled to keep his feet. Realizing he was going to fall, he grabbed his laser pistol and dove for the ground, spinning as he leaped so that he would land on his back. Skidding on the smooth floor, he looked back in the direction he had come, pointing his pistol with both hands. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Joe floundering at his right, also prone, but Mark was standing firmly upright with his back toward them and his rifle in his hand. He had evidently fired an EMP with a concussive charge. Zip saw a heap of crumpled metal beams, slender and flailing, just beyond the big Starmen. Even as Zip watched, he saw Mark whirl. "Joe!" shouted the big Starman. "Get him!" Lying flat on his stomach, Joe raised his rifle and fired. Zip felt the pressure in his ears again. He rolled over and looked down the corridor. "Ugly robots!" exclaimed Mark, coming at us from both directions. "Good thing I kept looking back. I don't think we've ever been as well armed as we are now, and I'm glad of it." Zip got shakily to his feet and then helped Joe up. "Yeah, good thing, Mark. Man, we'd better put our motion detectors on. Should have done that before." He made an adjustment to his comm pad and then stepped over to the wreckage of the robotic defenders. Slender, machine-like tripedal legs supported a body segmented like an insect's. Long, thin arms ending with spidery fingers gave evidence of grappling capabilities too disturbing to dwell on. Small parts were twitching in a random and meaningless way. If there were any weapons on the robots, they hadn't had an opportunity to use them. "Where did these eyesores come from?" queried Joe, his eyes wide with wonder. "We must have set off another alarm," stated Mark. "The ancient Lucians probably rigged these up to protect the power source in this cave." Well, I hope there aren't any more surprises in this funhouse. I'm glad you were alert, Mark. Still looking down, Zip said, The energy source is nearby. The indicators are strong now. He led the way along the corridor more warily than before. The passage turned to the right and opened into a large room. Here, said Zip simply. The room was beautifully organized, with dozens of sets of parallel plates, crystals that reflected the starman's suit lights like immense diamonds, aerials and other paraphernalia, most of it unrecognizable. If we're going to find it, it'll be here, stated the leader of the starmen. He stepped out into the bewildering array of apparatus and began to look for something that resembled what the janitor had shown them. I think maybe this is it, announced Joe, half an hour later. Zip and Mark quickly came to him. That's got to be it, confirmed Mark. Alternating plates of crystal and metal were linked by a mesh of connectors, all of which led into a set of cases. I agree with you, said Zip. This is it. It doesn't look too hard to disable. He looked up to his companions. Here's our way out. I'm going up that well to the surface, and I'll contact Tharsis by compad. It's the only way we've got that's not shielded. I'll give them our coordinates here and tell them to get us out by wormhole at a time I'll set. I'll have to figure out how long it takes to get up to the top of the well and back down. Mark, if you stay at the bottom of the well, we can probably communicate by line of sight. I'll get the confirmation from Tharsis and then get back down here. Joe, you can disable this contraption by yourself, can't you? Sure, Zip. The janitor showed us all how to do it. I'll be real careful so that the Xenobots above won't suspect a thing. We sure don't want them coming down here to check whether a fuse is blowing. Mark, just leave me your tools and I'll get started. Okay, then, that's our plan, nodded Zip. The hypershield will be down within an hour and our fleet will let the Xenobots have it. They'll be in for a big surprise. Their power stations and Taurus will turn to dust before they know it, and Tharsis can rescue us by wormhole and we'll be in the Star Ranger before lunch. Mark looked doubtful. You sound awfully confident, Zip, for one who's been so guarded about the Xenobots up to this point. Well, I know it won't be that easy, but I'm hopeful. Besides, I don't see any other way. Do you? Mark and Joe both shook their heads. A sudden feeling of dread shot through Joe. So far, it all seems too easy, he thought. It can't last. He shook the feeling off, determined to concentrate on his task. Well, then I'm off, said Zip. Good luck, Joe. They clasped hands. Then Joe opened his toolkit. Mark set his backpack down next to Joe and accompanied Zip back to the central chamber. The two starmen crossed it and came to the bottom of the well. More than 100 feet across, it rose straight up, disappearing quickly into darkness. Good luck, Zip, said Mark as the red-headed starman began to ascend the steps. In moments he'd reached the ledge. Zip stepped gingerly onto the platform of metal set with railings that hovered over the drop. It remained solid, so he put his weight onto it. He looked for controls and found them on a panel set into the railing. This can't be too difficult to figure out, he thought. He experimented carefully and in moments felt the slab begin to rise. It's working, he said to Mark. I'm going upward. Mark continued to gaze after the platform until long after it had disappeared into the darkness beyond the reach of his light. He turned off his own suit lights and saw a tiny halo of light spilling over the square of metal. As the minutes passed, it became smaller and smaller. Mark lay on his back so he could continue to look upward without straining his neck. When the light vanished, he checked his watch. Zip had been gone 4 minutes. The big starman got to his feet. Can you hear me, Zip? Just fine, came the response. This place is fantastic. Joe would love it. There are passages and corridors galore up here, going off into who knows where. When the conversation lagged, Mark turned on his suit lights again and looked over the room and was once again impressed by what he saw. The Amanians do beautiful work, he thought, but this is beyond even them. The elegance was more inspiring than anything he had ever seen and filled him with a longing for beauty that he knew could never be fully satisfied. It pulled him out of himself and reminded him of the murals he and Joe had seen on the moon that orbited the devastated planet. These people were masters of space, he thought, and masters of beauty. He saw carved in the stone floor and in the elegant steel that made up the gates beautiful images of landscapes and star systems and barren planets. At one time this race loved exploration. I wonder what happened. What made them turn? He wondered what it must have been like in those days and wished he could have seen them. All darkness now, he thought. All darkness. Meanwhile, Zip continued to rise higher. He saw increasing complexity in the design and architecture. Unknowingly, he was sharing Mark's thoughts. What a magnificent civilization this had once been. He could see what must have been lit areas for the various platforms. He imagined the Lucian people standing there looking out into the darkness. Memories of his childhood suddenly poured forth. When he had visited a train terminal in Cleveland, Ohio, he remembered the smell of ozone and diesel fuel from the electric trains and non-electric engines and the screech of steel wheels on steel tracks. He recalled the glare of a welder working on an engine with the headlight of a train off at a different angle. Though he hadn't thought of it in nearly 20 years, in his mind's eye he saw as if it were the day before, the red, green, and yellow signal lights here and there, and other platforms scattered about. For a moment, Zip forgot that he was floating toward the surface of the Xenobot's home planet, not knowing what he would encounter. He pictured the bustle of a busy Lucian population center and realized that in many ways they were or had been people like himself. The place had a real atmosphere. The well had a huge number of fascinating corridors and passageways that led into long, undisturbed darkness. He wondered whether Lucian children had enjoyed exploring this hub of activity and travel. It must have been a place of mystery and magic. When the platform came to a stop, Zip was calm. "I'm at the top, Mark," he said. "Can you hear me?" A weak signal came back. "I can hear you, but it's difficult. What do you see, Zip?" Mark's voice sounded far away, and there was a hint of echo, probably caused by the signal having to travel through 5 miles of confined vertical space. "I see a city. I think it's a city. I'm near the summit of a low hill on the outskirts of a plain. Everywhere is a plain. There's almost no variation whatever in elevation. It's flat in all directions. Just below me there are artificial structures spread out in a spaceport to my right. It's very hard to see since everything is engulfed in a fume or haze of some kind. There are no Xenobots on the hill. The city is filled with ruins, but it's crawling with life. There are things moving down there maybe 1/2 mile away. It's a dank, swampy planet, Mark, filled with pockets of gas. The sky is yellow and murky, and the sun is a blighted thing, like a spotlight shining through noxious vapors. It's foul, Mark, foul." "Don't waste time," Zip urged Mark. "Call Tharsis." "Right. I'm shutting down our communication system now so I can try the compad. I'll be back when I've sent the message." "Okay, Zip." Zip initiated the compad's communication system and then spoke into it. As he spoke, he continued to survey the surface of Luxa. "This is Starman David Foster. Mark and Joe and I have successfully transported to Luxa. I expect that the hypershield will be disabled at any moment. Apparently a tachyon shield was created when we stepped through the portal, so I'm communicating by compad. When the hypershield is down, you will be able to rescue the three of us by wormhole transfer." Here he provided the coordinates. "Please execute the wormhole transfer at precisely 9:50 a.m. and not before. The three of us cannot be at the prearranged site until then. Please acknowledge on this channel." The Starman informed Mark that he'd sent the message and would wait for confirmation from Tharsis before descending the well to rejoin his companions. He estimated it would take Tharsis no more than 20 minutes to respond to him. That would give him sufficient time to return to Mark and Joe before they were drawn back to Tharsis from the depths of the darkness inside Luxa. 1 minute later, Zip's suit communicator became active. Mark's voice came through, sounding distant and hollow, but still energized. "Joe just reported that the hypershield is down.